Welcome to Season 5 of Kin Folklore, where we have gone through a portal and returned to the world of His Dark Materials for Season 2 of the BBC HBO series based on the novels written by Philip Pullman. Last week, we discussed Lyra and Will's rescue from angry children and Chittagatsi about to get that ass. But the witches saved them. And Mrs. Coulter also rose to supervillain status.
In this episode, we'll be covering all of the demon-changing and world-exploring action of the Season 2 finale entitled Asahetra. We'll recap the episode, talk a bit about our observations, discuss the themes, and look through the Ember Spyglass for some background.
And if you're looking for adult content, you have come to the right place for coverage of how your demon is just gonna creep in the middle of the night over to your boo and like spill all the tea about your innermost thoughts. Like, she thinks you're brave. She thinks you're kinda cute too. Freaking Pan.
Did not like it.
No! He's like, she's all right. I mean, she's kinda brave, but I'd rather be your demon. Oh, man.
So, the start of our summary will start with Lee and Grumman, who, as we last saw them, are heading towards, Lyra and Will, trying to get to the Bear of the Subtle Knife. Mm-hmm. So, after their crash landing, they are tracked down by the Magisterium. Happens really quick. Grumman tells Lee they should head west. He believes he knows where the knife bearer is. Eventually, the Magisterium forces begin shooting at them. Lee is wounded, but he covers Grumman so that they can continue. When they're overrun by the Magisterium forces, Grumman volunteers to stay so Lee can flee. And Lee is like, nah. Yeah. I'm the fighter here. You're gonna die if you do that. He tells Grumman to continue his journey, and he says he'll stay behind and fight for them. But he asks Grumman to promise, once again, that he will make sure that Lyra receives the protection of the Subtle Knife. The two part their ways, and Hester tries her best to keep Lee's spirits up as he continues to shoot at the Magisterium troops.
Holding it down, going down in a blaze of glory, just shooting away. Oh, man.
There were a lot of Magisterian troops, like a lot. I mean, no, I was kind of surprised because in the previous episode, it looked like that most of the airships had crashed. And so this is the troops from one. It's kind of crazy.
Cardinal McPhail emptied the clip. He was like, I'm not going to fail. Even though fail is in my name, I'm not failing.
Well, he knows that Mrs. Coulter is going to drag him. All I see is failure.
was that a troll like early in the episode that we totally missed? She says, I see failure. And it's like his name. Like
your name is literally McPhail.
Yeah.
But she was actually harsher on Fra Pavel in that scene.
AKA like, Ratty.
She's like, you can't even read the alethiometer. My daughter's like 12.
Yeah. Oh, man. Tough stuff. So, speaking of Culty, finally free of Boreal, she wanders Chittagatsi alone, looking for Will and Lyra. The golden monkey finds the house they were staying at, and Mrs. Coulter snuggles with Lyra's old coat. It would be cute if it wasn't so fucking creepy.
It would be cute if she wasn't a homicidal maniac.
Oh, man. So, obviously, she's been spotted in Chittagatsi by the witches, and Serafina has sent her sister, Witch Lanafelt, to investigate and warn anyone in the city about the specters. When the witch comes face to face with Mrs. Coulter, she warns Culty to leave because of the specters. Oh, my sweet summer child. Oh, man. And the golden monkey attacks the witch's demon. And as the specters approach, Mrs. Coulter tries to get as much information out of the witch as possible. Finally, the witch tells Mrs. Coulter, unlike the first witch, this late man, I was like, man, just go down. Don't tell her anything. But she was in a lot of pain. She finally tells Mrs. Coulter what she wants to know and gives her Lyra's other name. Her name is Eve. Big. Yeah. Big. Like Eve, like Adam and Eve, in case, you know, for the people in the back. The specter attacks the witch's demon and she dies. So let's go ahead and let's pour one out.
Yeah. I mean, she was really like trying to save Mrs. Coulter. There's no saving her. Let's pour one out for Lena Felt.
Lena Felt, we barely knew you.
Mm-hmm. Like literally did not know her.
No, we really didn't. They did not. The lack of character development was appalling. But we will say this. Just, you know, when you get to the great beyond, just remember, you can't save Culty. It's not possible.
You really God. Can't.
You really can. Boreal learned the hard way. So Mrs. Coulter realizes that Lyra is Eve before the fall. This time she must not fall, Mrs. Coulter says. The Golden Monkey seems quite disturbed by all of this. He's a little bit worried, and she's not giving him any reason to feel secure. I mean, no. The Spectre.
She's basically unhinged, and he's disturbed.
Yeah, and rightfully so. Later, Culty has a one-sided argument with the Golden Monkey because he can't talk. We all know that. Like, you know what I mean? Like, telling him that if he's not with her, he's against her. I mean, what was she going to do? If she kills her demon, does she die, right? Was the Spectre going to become her demon? So she's like, what does that mean?
I mean, my assumption was that she would leave him somewhere. I don't think that I think that she will still die if she kills her own demon. But it was, I mean, also maybe she's just threatening to torture him. Like he knows that she can be very cruel and that she also, when he's hurt, she's hurt too, but she's willing to suffer.
Yeah. Okay. I'll roll with that. And she also tells him that it's not only that he's against her, but he's also against Lyra. Like, when did you guys link up and get on the same side? Not sure. Culty is playing, like, she doesn't understand what's happening here. So they head to the top of the tower where Mrs. Coulter summons all of the specters. Wild scene.
Yeah. It was, I mean, again, it was beautiful. It was also scary. So after their sister was attacked in the previous episode by the specters, the witches are able to revive her. But Serafina has realized just how dangerous this world really is for them. Mm-hmm. She tells Lyra that once they find Will's father, they have to go back to their world. Ruta Scotti, however, is, you know, elsewhere, and she overhears a group of cliff ghasts discussing Azrael and his plans for war with the Authority. The creatures say that Azrael needs a tool, the Asahetra, in order to win. Ruta immediately heads back towards Serafina and gives her this information. Serafina agrees that Ruta should go in search of the tool that Azrael needs, but explains that she has to stay with Lyra because she's focused on the prophecy. Lyra is a child that will bring about the end of destiny and return to free will, she tells Ruta. All of the witches, except for Ruta, continue to accompany Will and Lyra to find his father. Ruta goes off in search of Asahetra. And Serafina receives a message. Lee has finally used his cloud pine to summon her.
Finally.
Finally.
Oh.
Lyra implores her to go to Lee, even though she's a little skeptical. She wants to stay and protect Lyra and Will. And so she goes. But when Serafina finds Lee, it's too late. He's already died. And yes, let's just take a moment to talk about this scene with Lee dying. I have been very critical of the writing for Lee in general since the show started, but particularly in this thing with John Perry, aka Grumman. I just don't think the writers have done him justice. But man, if I did not cry when him and Hester were essentially saying goodbye to each other, this was a really difficult scene to watch.
Dare I say, it was even more dramatic than reading it in the book, right? Like, I think the dialogue here was done really well. Although I was very sad when I read it in the book. Like, I was like, all I kept saying was no. Like, cause I felt it coming And I was like, literally, like, out loud, like, saying, no, no, come on. Like, we already lost. Because it just made me think of all the people we lost. And this was one of, it's like, Lee, Yurik, Roger, these are the characters we loved from the very beginning. Of course, Billy. So anyway, yeah, it was tough. It's a very emotional scene. I knew it was coming for the whole season. I knew it was going to happen. I was kind of like, I was a little irritated that they waited to the last episode for it to happen, because that's like, man, like, that's the way we're going to end this. But I knew it was coming, and let's do it, man. Let's, like, Hester and Lee, let's pour one out for both of them.
They were both great characters. Like, I don't think that Lee ever got the writing that he deserved, but Hester did. I think Hester was like a great sidekick to Lee, and she's one of the few demons that does actually feel like a separate person in her own character. And Lee was devoted to Lyra, so I mean, look at all he's done to try to get her the protection of this tool. This was a rough one, and I knew, again, we knew it was gonna happen. I had predicted it was gonna be in the finale, but I was still a little salty that it was in the finale.
Yeah, I mean, I
felt like we needed some time to let this one breathe, because this is like a major loss for Lyra's alliances.
Huge. And they keep, I mean, one of the main people that has like put her at the forefront of everything. Like, I mean, he's never even been in the same room with Azrael. He's like, fuck that guy. He hurt Lyra. You know what I mean? Like, he's just been on top of it from the very beginning. And Hester is just the best. And the way that they went through all the trouble to help Yurik when Yurik was like in bondage and like knowing his story, it just, man, it's a tough loss. And it's a tough loss for Lyra and the whole world. And yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see what she does. You know, we'll see what she can do now that she's lost a major ally like this.
Yeah. I mean, the show is hinting heavily like Yurik will be back, right? He was in this episode, even though he didn't have any lines. But this felt almost like, you know, another Roger loss. And Lyra doesn't know yet. So we're going to have to relive this when she finds out.
Yeah. It's very true. And, you know, back with Will and Lyra throughout the episode, Will continues to dream about his father. One night, as we spoke about, Pan speaks to him while he believes Lyra is asleep. It kind of feels like he's hating a little bit. I'm just going to say.
I was not a fan.
I just don't mean, like, Will's like, oh, man, Lyra's really brave. She's like, she is sometimes. You know, like, kind of.
She all right.
You know what I mean? Will tells Pan that he's afraid, and Pan tells him that Lyra only sees his bravery. Will tells Pan that Lyra is the best friend he's ever had. Wow. It was really sweet.
Yeah.
Lyra heard that, too, because they pan over to her, and she's got a little smile on her face. So she was hearing it as well. So in the morning, Will wants to continue on their journey without the witches because he knows it is dangerous for them. He and Lyra discuss his conversation with Pan, and she tells him about Roger. I like that. I like Lyra's becoming a lot more like forthcoming and honest about the information of her past, which is really cool. After Serafina has gone to Lee, Will wakes from a nap and leaves a sleeping Lyra to look for his father on his own. After a short period, Will finds his father, and they have a brief but moving reunion. Will questions why his father never came back, which is a good question.
Mm-hmm.
I've had this question. But Grumman is focused on the knife. He tells Will it is the most powerful weapon in all of the universe, and it can destroy the authority. Does Will even know what the authority is?
No. I mean, this conversation was a mess.
It's like...
It was a mess. I mean, we'll talk about that in a moment, but like, this conversation was a mess.
It's totally wild. So Will has doubts, but his father encourages him and tells him that he, as the bearer, has the responsibility to take the knife to Asriel. Okay. This guy, I don't know. Unknown to Grumman, a Magisterium soldier has tracked him there and shoots at will. Grumman stands in front of him and stops the bullet and dies, telling him the night is full of angels. They will guide you now.
I know you don't want to, but we should pour one out for Stanislaus Grumman, a.k.a. John Parry.
Should we?
I think we should. He's a big character. This whole story starts out because of him. I acknowledge that he's garbage, but we poured a little drop out for Boreal, who is worse.
I mean, can we give him the decanter that the headmaster was pouring out? Can we do that? Him and Boreal will sip from the same chalice. All right? These fucking guys, man. Like, I just don't like that he was like, yo, where were you? You chose this world over me and mom. And he's all like, he's out here like, well, kind of, I mean, his comebacks were terrible. Like,
well, look at the man you've become without me. That's not the point.
Yeah.
Like, that's exactly. Not even the point. What are you talking about?
This is what happens. This is what you can, those are the kind of like sage wisdom, words of wisdom you can expect from a man rocking a freaking man bun. This is it. Okay?
I mean, in addition to that, I was so upset that he did not mention Lyra. Like, Lyra should have been his dying words. Like, Lee made him promise. He promised. He has no idea that Will knows Lyra.
I mean, you can't take the word of a fucking guy who abandons his wife and children and takes on a demon and decides he's going to, like, go on Asriel's, like, freaking quest and becomes a shaman and then comes back. I mean, what the fuck? This guy is so undependable. He's like the dude that you met like in passing at Coachella and thought he was your homie. That's not real. It's not real.
Yeah. I wanted better for Will. I mean, I really did. I wanted better for Will. Anyway, let's finish up with what happened in the episode so we can get...
I'm just tight. All right, so we poured one out, okay? We poured a little bit, a little smattering, okay? Get a little tiny bit. It's a little tiny bit. None of the good stuff. None of the stuff like we cracked open when 45 went down. Anyway, during the heartwarming... and, oh, man.
Go on.
I mean, he could have, like... Can I just say this last thing? Just the last, like you said, his dying breath. This man gave up his life for him. And all Grumman could say was about the angels, Asriel, yada, 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 yada. He's like, it's so desperate. He's just so desperate. I don't care. Sort of like 45. Anyway, during the heartwarming and heartbreaking reunion, the specters have found the witches and killed them. And Mrs. Coulter has taken Lyra. Will comes back to find that. Somewhere in another world, Asriel gives a rousing speech. Rousing is debatable. It is debatable.
Yeah, I mean, it starts out very, my war is really with the authority. But then he gets more into it.
Yeah, so then he says his war is with the authority and lets who he's speaking to know that together we can build a republic of heaven above and a republic of ideas below. There are no neutral grounds. When he finishes, a voice tells him they are with him and many angels appear above. These angels are out here, man. They're not messing around.
So two things. One was, and these are things I'm genuinely unclear about having watched the episode a couple of times. Did Will go back? Or did Will just head off?
I think he went back. He went back and there was nobody there. He went back and when he's looking, everybody's gone.
Okay, I wasn't 100% sure about that. And he just didn't seem as alarmed as he should have been with Lyra missing, you know? Like, I can understand he might think that maybe, like, the witches went to help Serafina.
Mm-hmm.
But... I expected him to be alarmed, but I also, okay. I'm getting ahead of myself. How did you feel about this episode?
It was not the best episode of the series and the season. And we try really hard not to, like, you know, dunk on the show, because we like the show and we like aspects of the show. And we also love the story. Like, I love the books. But I felt like they had a lot of ground to cover. I was very concerned about this, and they condensed what is a lot of information into one episode. And obviously I'm giving them a little bit of a break of why some things are missing, because of the fact that we're all experiencing this pandemic, and they did the best they could with that. But I do feel like it just felt uneven. It didn't feel like the pacing was solid. It felt like there were things that were unexplainable based on the story. And some of that is the source material, right? There's some things that we've talked about offline that kind of, like, you know, some of it is like, man, this is, you know, you're asking these answers, as you said earlier when we were talking, and you're asking these questions, but you're not giving the answers, and that's tough. But I also think some of it is that they gave us, again, the cliff note version of the story. Like, this whole thing has felt like, here's the high points. And what I'm concerned about, and why I think it's really important, why we even do some of this stuff on the podcast of slowing things down and explaining, is I'm concerned that if you haven't read the books, you may not know what's going on. That's my concern.
Yeah. So I have two things that really stood out for me in this particular episode. This was the first episode where I felt like they lost an episode. Mm-hmm. They were supposed to be 8 episodes a season. I hate talking about the meta stuff, but, like, I think we have to address it. Mm-hmm. Asriel was supposed to have his own episode. He was not supposed to just be in 2 minutes of this show. Mm-hmm. And because of COVID-19, they were unable to film that final episode, which I think would have had, like, I don't think that was going to be the finale. I think this was going to be the finale, but I think it would have filled in the blanks. It probably would have been episode 7, and yeah, this would have been episode 8. And the reason I think that is because I found it really odd that when Ruta Scotti returns to Serafina, she recounts this conversation she had with Asriel, but we didn't see any of that. And in the book, Ruta Scotti gives a very big description of what she encountered when she spoke to Asriel, mm-hmm, and where he is and what he's doing and who's with him. And I think the reason that that was cut short was because we would have actually seen that, as opposed to her just telling Serafina about it.
Yeah.
I felt very much like this episode was chaotic in a way that I really didn't like. I felt like episode 6 was a bit chaotic, but it was okay, mm-hmm, that it was chaotic. This one felt, there was a lot of cutting back and forth. We had multiple storylines happening. We didn't even mention in our summary Mary Malone, right? Because, like, there's nothing really happened with her that was significant, but they're kind of setting her up for next season. But she was in this episode too. There was just too much packed into 50 minutes. I mean, yeah, I don't remember how long the episode was, but the episodes have been about 47 to 52 minutes or so. This one didn't feel especially long. So there was just a lot. It was almost too much. And then, having spoken to some of the fans of both the show and our podcast after it aired, there was a lot of confusion. I felt like I did more explaining about the show than I've ever had to do.
Agreed.
And, you know, I think that we try to explain things in a way where we're trying to avoid, because we don't know where the show is going. So we're trying to avoid spoilers. Mm-hmm. But now I kind of regret being overly cautious, because there were things I don't think that the show actually explained,
yeah,
that we could have explained. We kept having this conversation, like, should we discuss this? Should we discuss that? No, that could be one of the big reveals. Yeah. But then there are things that the show has told us many times, and it just keeps telling us. Like, I just don't understand this whole, like, Grumman going by multiple names, Grumman not knowing his son. Like, there's so much stuff that, like, happened in the book, and I'm, you know, they're using the source material, but I think it just adds the confusion of the audience. Yeah. Because it's like, people are like, wait, I already knew that John Perry and Grumman were the same person.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like there was still some mystery around that this season. And then in addition, there's all these folks that have different information or don't have the full story. And then some, but the audience is supposed to. Then there was that weird cliffhanger last week, or I guess it was 2 weeks ago with the, what is Lyra's name?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I had initially been like, well, let's just talk about Eve in this episode. And then I was like, but they didn't reveal it, so that must be one of their reveals. And I don't, as someone who read the book, I didn't want to spoil mm-hmm. if that wasn't clear. And I'm glad we didn't, because a few people were like, I don't understand what this even means. Like, she's Eve? What do you mean she's Eve? She's yeah. Eve reincarnated. Like, it's a little bit muddled. And so I liked a lot of the scenes independently. Mm-hmm. I thought the scene between Grumman and Will was, or I guess we should call him John Perry and Will Perry. I thought that the scene was moving because they're both good actors. The conversation was a mess.
Conversation was a mess. And
how does Will know who Azrael is?
He doesn't know who Azrael, well, he does know who Azrael is.
Right, but how does his dad know that?
That's true. That is the point that's crazy.
How does he know? John is from our world, like his son. Mm-hmm. So he knows we don't call God the authority.
Yeah.
I mean, Will just doesn't, he just made all these leaps. And I was like, I know you have limited time here, but like, how do you know that Will knows who Azrael is? You just asked him a second ago, did he come through a window?
Yeah. And for me, I didn't think that, you're right, the acting was really good in that scene, but I think all of the shortcutting that we were concerned about on Lee's journey, which eventually becomes Grumman's journey, which really had a lot of depth to it in the book, all of that shortcutting led to a pretty flat moment for me personally when watching this scene between Will and John Perry. I felt like, oh, okay, because in the book, I don't want to stay on, oh, the book is so much better. I'm not trying to say it that way. I just feel like in the book, because of all the depth of what we learn about Will and the longing that he had for his father, which is captured in the show, and then all of the depth of also Grumman's like journey, and then losing Lee, and then you see this reunion, and you feel that joy of like, oh my God, they're together. It actually starts out with like a fight and a tussle to find out, oh wait, okay, cool. This is like they recognize each other, and then you see that love and joy in their and like the moment of like, oh yes, we're together again, and then it's snatched away. Even when he dies in this thing, I don't feel like it's snatched away the way I felt in when I was reading. I just was like, oh, okay, he's gone. Because I didn't have the emotional buy-in to Grumman as a character on the show. That's just
yeah, and it also just felt like inevitable. Like,
yeah,
it felt like it was coming. I just also want to note that they did a lot of work in the beginning of the season to kind of like build up the witches in a different light. The witches are gone now. Like who's left? Ruta and Serafina?
Yeah.
Like that seemed also really horrifying to me that happened that way. And I'm sort of like, I don't know. I have so many issues. I had a lot of issues with this particular episode. And to be honest with you, like, I don't want to give them too hard of a time, because some of the issues I'm having with the episode are actually issues that I'm discovering I now had with the book.
Yeah.
That, like, a lot of the things were things I accepted in the book for whatever reason, just because. And seeing them on screen, I'm like, wait, this doesn't work.
Yeah.
I don't understand why this is happening this way.
Agreed.
Anyway, let's get into some of the like more notable moments from the episode.
Well, let's skip the episode and let's talk about the most notable moment. Let's just skip the whole episode
true.
And let's go to like the after credits. Holy shit, what is Roger doing here?
I know, I'm so excited.
Oh my God, I was so hyped. Like, okay, if you did not watch the episode past the credits and you have not read anything about this, you should watch the post-credit sequence. If we're spoiling anything right now, it's a minor spoiler and worth watching anyway. But after watching the episode, I did not watch the post any post-credits, and I didn't read our like some of the things that we do to research. And I was just like, okay, I'm gonna enjoy Christmas. And then like after the Christmas holiday, and I'm like scrolling through some stuff, and they're like, oh, the post-credit sequence. And I was like, what post-credit sequence? And I go back and I watch the episode, and there's Roger. And Lyra's talking, and Roger's calling out to her. And this is a call out to the next book, which is crazy.
Yes, I was excited about this. This also gave me, I mean, okay, so when I first watched the episode, I knew about this, and it left me pretty excited. And so I didn't, like, I hadn't thought deeply about the other issues in the episode. I was mostly just sad about Lee, but then I was like, first of all, we get the little clip of Yurik. So I was like, yes, they're getting us ready for Yurik to return to the story. But then to hear Roger's voice, I was hyped. Oh, I'm so excited.
So good. Do we talk any about what that means, or do we just say stay tuned, because that's big? Like, it's really a big part of what's coming, right?
Yeah, I think we let people research it on their own.
Okay.
Because I don't want to spoil the next book for them, or the, you know, the next season. And it's easy to find out what this is all about, but Roger, they've told us Roger will be returning to this story, which was exciting, especially since he got a call out from Lyra in this episode.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So we'll find out more about where they are and what's going on in the next and final season of this whole entire series, which is really great that we'll get some Roger back, we'll get some Yurik, and it's the people who we really loved in the story to start out with in the beginning. So it's really cool. And you know, let's talk about the serpent, Mary Malone. Probably one of my favorite people, and
she's the only adult that I really like in this.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Serafina a lot, and I like Ruta a lot too, but
we love Ma Costa. You know, but she's
that's true. That's fair. I always forget about Ma. We haven't seen her in a while. But like, Mary Malone is just like such a pure hearted, good person. Just a genuinely good person.
It was really cool. It was really cool that she got them to the adults. You know, Angelica and Paola are now shepherded through based on the fact that she could keep them safe, which is what I wanted Will and Lyra to do, you know, when getting them through somewhere to someplace. And now they're back with the adults that fled Chettagatsi, which is really, really cool that she was able to do that for them and get them there. I love that scene. And it just, you know, showed who she is as a person even more so, you know. And then, all right, let's just cut right to it. This episode was tough for Will.
I was upset. Will, what are you doing here?
What are you doing?
You're so single-minded. Like, he gives Lyra this whole, like, for the second time, really, too. Like, we should go our own way.
What does he have against the witches? All they've done is try to help you. They saved you from that beatdown you were about to get on top of the roof.
Like, they healed his hand.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that Will is feeling overwhelmed by his responsibility as the bearer of the knife. And also, he just feels that longing for his dad. And we have to remember his mom is at home with his coach. Like, he's very concerned about his mother.
He shouldn't be, because coach is more than happy to have moms over. Okay. Like, it's those two look like they're just fine. Those two kids are making out just fine.
And this is an instance where I do think that all of the work they did with Will in season one does benefit him, because otherwise this whole thing that happens at the end of the episode would have been a real problem for me.
I agree.
It's a problem for me anyway, but like not in the same way. I'm willing to forgive him because Will is essentially a loner. He tells Pan he's never really had friends. He told Lyra a couple of episodes ago that he has really felt isolated, essentially, because his mom is mentally ill and gets bullied. And his whole life has been about like trying to stay under the radar so social services doesn't take him away from his mom, you know, missing his dad and trying to take care of his mother.
Mm-hmm.
So I understand why he's so single-minded in this episode. But the only thing protecting these witches from the specters is that knife. The witches don't have any allegiance to Will. They're there for Lyra.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have left if Lyra had not convinced them to stay. They're staying so they can help him. And he leaves them unprotected. And takes a knife with him, which is a bearer. That's the responsible thing to do. And then has this extended conversation with his dad. And then while he's gone, the witches get murdered.
Not a good
look. It was really hard for me. I really had an issue with the end of this episode for Will. I just think that like... I can't justify him being like, it's too dangerous for them to come with us. And then just leaving them unprotected, unannounced, while they're vulnerable. It would have been one thing if Will had been like, listen, I need to go my own way, you know, and said that and let everybody know he was leaving so they can at least be on their guard. But they're here sleeping because they think that they have some level of protection.
Yeah.
And their scout told them there were no specters. Okay, so the scout obviously didn't know that Mrs. Coulter was summoning all of the specters. How could she know that?
Not at all.
But Will couldn't even do his part to protect them. It was this was deeply upsetting. Yeah. And I'm not worried about Lyra at this moment because Lyra is scrappy and she still has Pan with her and she gets out of all kinds of situations. And you know, she's with her mom who is conflicted but loves her.
And she's outwitted. She's outwitted her mom many a time.
Multiple times. Yeah. But like the witches, I have a hard time. This was horrible.
And what happens when Ruta finds out that he just like, and Serafina finds out that he just like stumbled away from like camp and got their other witches killed. And when Ruta finds out that he is the bearer of the knife and that the knife is Esahetra, what happens then?
I mean, I'm deeply concerned about what happens when Ruta, who seems extremely enthusiastic about taking on the authority with Azrael, finds out that Will, who is a child, has this knife. Also, like, off script here, off page, is that Ruta and Azrael have a romantic relationship previously.
It's hinted.
And so, yeah, I mean... Ruta clearly trusts Azrael and Serafina trusts Ruta. And I think that's why she says, go look for this weapon. But like, who knows what's going to happen when Ruta discovers that he's the one who has it. She's the one who seems single-minded. Like she has to have the knife. I mean, she doesn't know she's looking for a knife, I guess, but
yeah,
she'll figure it out pretty quickly.
She will. And speaking of Azrael, his speech is crazy. It's just to kind of go over it. He goes, my fight is with the authority and those doling out cruelties in his name, those who seek to divide in order to control and who have built worlds founded on privilege and divine right rather than care and need. I fight for freedom of knowledge in place of deceit, intolerance and prejudice. I fight for the possibilities of understanding truth and acceptance. But I tell you this now, there is no neutral ground. You're either for me or you're against me. Now, which is it? You're out there. I know you are. Answer me. A republic of heaven above and a republic of ideas below. Wow.
Yeah. So this speech was, I mean, for the first time, I was Team Azrael. Like, I would have been like, I'm with you, bro. Let's do this.
I don't trust the source.
I mean, we're on record that the very first episode of this podcast, Azrael is trash.
Yeah. I mean, like the very first thing when he flies off on the airship, the way he treats Lyra, I was like, I'm out on this guy. Right? Now, I hear his little speech about injustice and tolerance for all and divine right. You know what? But I don't know. I don't trust him. I still don't trust him. We'll see.
Of course. I mean, I don't. All of a sudden, Azrael, who is a person of privilege, is now out here. In like, who uses deception is now out here being like, I'm for truth and justice for all. I was convinced by the speech. I was like, sure, let's fight the authority. Let's do this.
Yeah, for the last 4 years, we've dealt with somebody from the 1% trying to manage the affairs of the 1%. Let's not do it. Just in our own world. But listen, I think that the thing that is really interesting, and we have talked about this, is that both Azrael and Mrs. Coulter have black and white thinking. You're either with mm-hmm. me or against me. Which one is it?
They both said that this episode.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, that's how they see the world. Like, are you with me? Are you on my side? Or am I going to have to fight you? Like, that's what I want to know. And I think, like, there's, you know, it's that's why I don't trust Azrael. I don't think that he can find a space to, like, have, like, the neutral ground, the balance necessary, right? It's like either or, you're, you know, for or against. And I think, like, that's not what's going to be necessary in this, maybe, you know, maybe I'm reading other stories into this story, but I don't think that that's really going to be the thing that's going to help Lyra and Will fulfill their mission.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of this story is about gray areas. Mm-hmm. And that like black and white thinking that they both have, which is you are either my ally or my enemy, disturbs me. Because like, what does it mean? We know what Mrs. Coulter means when she says mm-hmm. that, but Azrael's raising of army here. What does he mean when he says that? And what happens if Lyra, his child who he was going to sacrifice until he came across Roger, is not with him? What are the consequences of people who are not with him? And so I thought his speech was very convincing. I certainly understand why the angels have taken his side, and I understood why Ruta seemed to be convinced as well. But yes, any leader who has this stance of you're with me or against me, it's not great.
No, bad look. Because you have to have the openness to be able to, I think, like, the mark of, you know, true leadership is being able to have dissenting voices, like, question you and be able to answer that question. Like, right? To be able to say, yeah, no, I'm not with you because I think this, this, and this. And then maybe through you adjusting or making adjustments, you can get people to your way of thinking, or you may move towards their way of thinking. You know what I mean? Like that you may simply just say, you know what? You're right. I probably can rethink about it and do it this way. So I don't know. I don't know how this is going to end for Azrael. I'm sticking with my take on what I think until the very, very end. And if he proves me wrong, I'll own it. But I'm not a huge fan. And his speech is important, though, because it comes from, it's a core of, like, this whole Azrael plot line and what he's trying to accomplish and the Adam and Eve trope and everything is a big part of where Pullman pulled this story. And we're going to talk about that, take a little look through the amber spyglass and talk about Paradise Lost. We'll be right back. So, Paradise Lost is the inspiration for the series His Dark Material. It's a 17th century poem called Paradise Lost, written by John Milton. It was published in 1667, and the epic poem retells the story of temptation of Adam and Eve and the fall of man. It is in many ways a lyrical story of war between God and Lucifer. The angelic war is told from multiple points of view in the story. In the Book of Revelations, the angelic war describes the rebellion of Lucifer and the other angels. It begins because the angels refuse to be subjects to God and his sons. Believing the angels are self-begot, self-raised, following the war, Lucifer, aka Satan, and the other fallen angels are cast out of heaven. But Lucifer is not finished. He seeks his revenge by tempting God's new beloved creatures, Adam and Eve. Milton's characterization of Eve is more complex than the Bible's. Eve is intelligent, curious, and headstrong. Adam is heroic and infatuated with his wife, which is why he follows her into temptation. As we discussed previously, when examining the role of the serpent, Eve commits her sin by eating from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and then convinces Adam to eat from it as well. However, in Milton's work, Eve is the one who is tricked by the serpent, and Adam willingly follows her sin because of his devotion to her. If Lyra is Eve, we can assume Will is Adam. And that tracks with the last episode. Lyra is still ignorant about her whole role, but Will knows that he has a role to play in the impending war. We can assume as well that at some point Lyra will have to make an important choice, but she allows the serpent to tempt her or resist. Or whatever her choice is, the fate of the world will depend on whatever she does.
Yeah. So, you know, I've heard some people call this the retelling of Paradise Lost. So Pullman doesn't characterize it that way, even though he took the title for the series, His Dark Materials, from a passage in Paradise Lost. But he does talk a lot about how reading Paradise Lost influences storytelling. Really impacted him as a young man when he read it in school. Mm-hmm. And I do think it's very interesting that Milton's Eve is very similar to Lyra. Yeah. She is intelligent, curious, and headstrong. Mm-hmm. Those are all things we can say about Lyra, although I wouldn't say headstrong. I would call her stubborn. Mm-hmm. But she is all of those things. And I just also thought it was very interesting that, like, Eve is tricked by the serpent because the serpent flatters her and essentially, like, gets her to do this thing without her understanding the consequence. But then Adam knows the consequence and does it anyway. Yeah. So I'm interested to see where the story, if that tracks with Will. Like, we know Will has a lot more information than Lyra. Lyra doesn't even know about the prophecy, really.
Lyra just got kidnapped, so she's, like, all out here, like messed up.
But, like, I don't think Lyra's aware of too much here, right? The headmaster is probably the one who told her the most. Yeah. And he withheld quite a bit of information from her. And so I think it's interesting that she's the one, we've been told multiple times that she has a thing to do, but she can't know that she has to do it, which Yorick really had a problem with.
I mean, if you know the story too, I find it really fascinating that, like, we're talking about Eve who ate from the tree of knowledge, and that Lyra has the ability to read the alethiometer, which has all the knowledge, like, in the world, right, that we're in. Mm-hmm. And then Will loses those fingers as the bearer of the knife, and that Adam in the story, you know, early before there was an Adam and Eve, they talk about, like, the rib of Adam being taken out to create, you know, Eve and the whole thing, and that he loses a piece of his flesh to become the bearer. So I think there's some parallels to, like, the Bible story. There's some parallels to the poem. It's really interesting that they've done it this way. So it's fascinating. I do find that part of it fascinating, and that part of the story fascinating, that they're making all these interesting tie-ins. It's brave too, because, you know, obviously people have, you know, strong beliefs around these spiritual concepts and religious mm-hmm. concepts. So it's brave of as a writer to write about these things and take almost like, you know, poetic license with retelling of a story that's this central in a faith. You know what I mean? So anyway.
Yeah, I agree. So the theme, not even just for this week, although I think it was demonstrated pretty well for this week, but I actually think that one of the themes of the story overall is like the complexity of human nature. Mm-hmm. We kind of just talked about it with Azrael. So Azrael is not a good man. Like, we know he's not, but he may be a great one. Mrs. Coulter wants to save her daughter, but also fears her daughter. Grumman is a loving father, but also an absent one. And throughout the story, we see all of these characters' natures at war with themselves regularly. This push and pull between who we are outwardly and who we are inside is really brought to life in the conversations that these characters have with their demons. In this episode, we see it multiple times. The golden monkey does not understand Mrs. Coulter's drive to find Lyra. In fact, the golden monkey, I think, is like, can we go back to the flat in Oxford?
I would.
Like, what are... I was very comfortable. What are we doing right now? And he doesn't really understand her command over the specters. Mm-hmm. And she gives him this ultimatum. You're with me or you're against me.
She lets a specter get super close to him, too. Like, he's like she's going to let it eat him alive. And then she's like, oh, yeah, no, it's okay. No problem.
And the way he threw that witch's demon to the specter was, God. He was like, take it. We also see this between Lee and Hester. When Lee is losing hope, Hester is holding on to it for him. When he begins to panic, she tries to hold him steady. Pan and Lyra are also not in total harmony all the time. Pan's conversation with Will feels like a real violation of Lyra's privacy. Her demon is telling Will her innermost feelings. But through Pan, Lyra is also beginning to understand how deep her connection to Will is becoming and exploring her feelings for him. In Pullman's work, he's sort of exploring the duality of humanity, both in the physical and the spiritual natures in which people exist. Demons provide a physical representation of the soul and allow these conversations and debates to play out in front of the audience. As a coming-of-age story, His Dark Materials is asking its audience to attempt to understand identity and consciousness. It's asking the audience, like, what the physical presentation of their nature would be and how did it come to be? And I think this is why the story is a little harder to tell than, you know, many other beloved children's stories. It's messy. It's complicated. It's sometimes frustrating. But importantly, it's asking some big metaphysical questions about the state of humanity and our relationship to spirit and science. And so I think that thread, that frustration that that a lot of people are feeling about the story and not understanding it is part of the nature of what the story he's trying to tell. It is messy. There's a lot of gray area. And it is confusing because we haven't answered these questions.
Yeah.
We haven't answered them through science. We haven't answered them fully through religion. We haven't really been able to fully answer them. And so I think that's what makes this story like both a rich story that I like because it's provocative and it makes me think, but also deeply frustrating from like a plot and character standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. And I really, really love that you are bringing that up because I do. I do like that. I am drawn to stories that kind of put on display this kind of connection between the metaphysical, the science, spirit, human relationships. Like, this stuff really draws me in. And it's sometimes shows up in my own creative work. So I appreciate that about what is being done here. And I hear what you're saying about that's why it's messy, because we don't have answers to these things. These are big questions that are not answered. So I agree that could be why it is there. But I love that at least there's work out here that's trying to tackle that, you know?
And I think there are ways he could have done it better. And there's certainly ways that this story could have been told for the small screen better. I still really think this season was good. Yeah. You know, we've kind of like ripped this particular episode and been very critical of it. But overall, I was very pleased with this season. I felt that they, aside from the Lee and Grumman stuff, I felt like they actually leveled up a lot of the storytelling. Mm-hmm. It was definitely there was like a little realism in there along with all of the fantasy elements. It introduced us to Mary, who is a wonderful addition to the characters. Mm-hmm. But it was, you know, there are still things I think, just speaking to some of our listeners, and also just people who are fans of the show, like on Twitter and in through other mediums, people are a little frustrated.
Yeah.
If they haven't read the source material, they're not really clear on what's happening. And so I think that's okay as long as people stay with the story. I think it will be worth it once we get to season three. I think a lot more will make sense to everyone.
Yeah, I'm really happy that they've made the decision, because it was up in the air to finish this and do season three. And I know that there's other parts that, you know, there's a lot that, you know, there's other books that exist outside of the original trilogy. But I think that to conclude it, at least here with the trilogy, makes the most sense for everybody. And I'm glad, like until they can, you know, figure out what they want to do. Maybe they do a spinoff show or whatever, if they feel inclined. But I am happy that they're going to at least finish the trilogy in this show, and that we'll have one more season of the show to kind of close out some of the things that have been out there. And I would just encourage everyone, since it's probably not going to happen until the end of this year, and we're at the beginning of the year, and everybody's got New Year's resolutions, right? I know I do. If you really want to enjoy this show, I would encourage you to read the books, because the show is a lot more enjoyable to me as being someone who has the extra knowledge. There's parts where, like, you hear us criticize, we're like, wow, you skipped over a lot. But there's also parts where, if I'm being fair to the show, where they've condensed parts that were drug out during the books, that were like, oh, well, you didn't really need all of that. This is probably easier to get and move the story along. So I do give them credit for that. And I encourage you, read the books, because I think it will help you to enjoy the show more if you really are into it and you just feel like, man, I like what I think I like about the show, but I don't have all the context. It will help a lot with that.
Yes. I totally agree. The books are definitely exploring things that the show doesn't explore in detail because it just doesn't have time. I think they're definitely worth a read. Even if you feel like you've been spoiled, they're still worth a read. You know, like, the plot points are not the only richness to the books.
I totally agree. Speaking of books, do you want to talk about what we're doing next?
Sure.
Because, you know, there are books. Like, you know, book one, book two, book three, you know, book four, I guess, in this case, too. So we will be returning back to the world of Avatar. This time, we're going to hang out with Avatar Korra.
I'm the Avatar.
And you got to deal with it. She's the Avatar, and you got to deal with it.
It's the best scene in the whole show, and it's like in the first 5 minutes.
Man, so good. So yeah, we're gonna go hang with Korra. On the way, we're gonna probably take a little bit of time. I think we're gonna you know, prepare for the season. So it'll probably be somewhere in a month or so that we'll go ahead and kick off our Korra coverage. We may have some bonus coverage around comics and things of that nature that we'll announce as we get closer. But yeah, we are going back into that world to cover, like, when we decided in the beginning that we were going to do it, we wanted to go right to Korra also, and then just looked at our time frame and realized we would not be able to cover His Dark Materials and do Korra justice, as we said on a previous episode. So we waited, and now we're ready. It's time.
It is time indeed. I'm excited about talking about Korra with you and going back. I kind of miss the whole Atla crew.
Oh,
I know not all of them are in Korra, but I kind of just miss them. Like I was gonna do a rewatch of Atla over the break, and then I decided I should actually just go ahead and finish watching Korra. I was like, I don't have the luxury to rewatch Atla right now, but it's such an expansive and beautiful world, and I'm excited to talk about it. A lot of people have strong feelings about Korra. Many of my friends really love Korra, and some not big fans like some of the stuff that it did, but I think it'll be fun to look into and explore a little bit more, and I'm just kind of excited to see what happened to our folks after that final episode.
Yeah, I think what we'll do too is we've talked a little bit about it, and we're gonna see how we can do it. Maybe talk about that time period. You know, we'll figure out whether we'll do it interspersed into the episodes or maybe as standalone episodes. But talking about that time period between when that final episode of Avatar to where we end up in the first episode of Korra, because a lot of that's covered in like comics, not actually animated series. But we'll talk a little bit about that, because one of our friends was like, "I'm never reading the comics. You guys do an episode of it." Shout out to Bo. He's like, "You guys do an episode of it covering it? I'll listen, but I'm never reading the comics." so we got you covered, brother. We got you covered. So that's what we're doing, and we thank you guys so much for listening to this season and enjoying His Dark Materials with us. And we look forward to continuing with the coverage of Korra.
Yeah, thanks everyone, and Happy New Year. Hopefully 2021 will be much better than 2020.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I hope that for all of you and for all of us, for sure. But thanks again, and have a good week. We'll see you soon.
Bye, everyone.